figure out was, yeah, okay, well, that they went out twice. There was probably three different shoots, the Mardi Gras, and the party was actually the day before Mardi Gras, the party where they got all crazy. and I thought it was just real nice the way he went from Mardi Gras to Ash Wednesday. You know, it just shows you, because it shows you that these are, you know, we're people. It's not just music. It's not just notes. You know, it's the way people live, and you play music how you feel, and you play it always differently, you know. Any other comments? I mean,
are they free men of color?
Boisek, it seems like, yeah, from what he's told me, Marceline, his wife, has told me something like that. They don't call themselves that, but they had land back a long time, so just that fact. Well, I think, I don't know. That I don't know.
That was filmed in 72?
I think so, 72, 73. I can't remember. 72. You know, you go back a little bit far, yeah. Yeah, it was a nice time.
Is it different now, 16 years later? Same basketball hoops? No.
The basketball hoop is there, but it's a Sears basketball hoop now. Yeah, it's still there. And where Boisek, it's really unique where he lives. For those of you who've gone to Mamou, when you come from Eunice and gone to Mamou, you have a big curve, and all you have to do is take a left, and you go down there. Just the way I describe it, because I can't 2.5 miles or something like that, and you'll see these row of houses just like that. It's the land that Boisek owns, that his father owned, and the land around there, which is really neat, and there's just a line of houses, and it's the same house there. Most of his family's still there. He had a big family. His daughters have moved away. They used to have a family band with Russell and Morris. Like I mentioned, Bud was killed, the accordion player. And he was an extraordinary person. He always had these premonitions of things to come. He was just way advanced for his time. Canary told me this haunting story not too long ago. We're talking about Bud. That was Canary found to play with Bud. And Boisek had kind of given up the accordion, so Canary was starting to play with Bud, and Bud was having these premonitions that he would die before his time, but he would die, his shoes wouldn't be on, you know, and Canary said, oh, what you talking about, shut up, you know. So after Job, that's exactly what happened. He got hit by a car while he was driving. The truck went into his lane, and for some reason he had taken off his boots before when he got in the car, so he did die with his shoes off. I mean, this is just a little bit of folklore, but this is how powerful this guy was. And this family in Boisek can read cups. I don't know if you ever heard anybody can read coffee cups after you drink it. It's a unique family.
Sometimes it's teacups and then it's coffee cups.
Coffee cups.
He has the greatest smile.
Oh, yeah. Ganarin? Yeah. Oh, they're just great people, yeah.
What was the throwing of the coins?
All right, they went, you see, before that, that's interesting you bring that up. Before, the first scene was at someone's house where they were all getting together. It was all a black community. It was all black people. And they were preparing for Mardi Gras, playing Mardi Gras, going out. The scene with the coins is when they went to a store, and there was the white proprietors, and they were throwing out coins because the Mardi Gras, you notice there was one person who wasn't masked. He was a guy with the flag. He had a white flag, that's Morris. So they were throwing out coins because he's the captain. They were asking for money or anything. That's what the Mardi Gras is all about. You go around a certain time. You just go around a certain person's house or a town or whatever and ask for things to put in the gumbo, duck, chicken, whatever. So he was throwing out money to buy rice, which was kind of unique. I noticed the little guy came up there and handed him. That was in his hand. That's what that was about. You don't usually find that in the... I mean, that's one way you find that every... It just depends. If you don't have anything to give, then you give money for the rice, you know. Most of the time, and that was the chicken thing. Before that, you saw they were chasing chickens. That was it. See, they went up there. The guy, Capitan, was a man who was not masked, and everybody else is masked. So he'll ask the person who owns the home if he has something to give, and the guy says, yes, a chicken. This chicken, not all the chickens. So they have to chase down that chicken. And that was unique, I mean, the way he went through it, because it is hard to find a chicken, man.
I got a question. In 1986, there's still blacks and whites who live primarily using French rather than English?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's approximately, I mean, it's inflated, but there's approximately 1 million French-speaking people in Louisiana now. And I can only truthfully tell you this stuff as far as, you know, my life. I was born in 51, and I can remember up to the 60s, most businesses and the language that I heard from around my house was in French. Also dealing with people, dealing with businesses, banks, etc. You still hear banks now. Somewhere after the 60s, it really became Anglo because of television and everything like that.
But I presume you got English in first grade, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's still Mike's as well, boys.
Yeah.
This is French.
Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, you know, it just depends on where you grew up. Your grandmother, and that's usually the generation that continues to speak French. That's where, when you went to their house, you heard it. I mean, you still hear it. Huh. It's not dead, and it's still not.
On the radio.
Oh yeah, there's more French music on the radio now than there ever has been. Huh. It's times are bad in Louisiana right now because of this oil economy. I mean, it is just really, even Sade was talking to me about that. Those of you who went to Fred's Lounge, you know, they have this French music program in the morning, and they're having a hard time because the announcers don't want to pay for announcements in French because there's just no business. And, you know, that part of it's bad. The part about having a French radio is real good. In Lafayette, I'm part of this FM radio station. It's a public radio station. It's called KRVS. And we're one of the only bilingual French-speaking station, PBS, what is it?
PBS, the only one?
Yeah, not PBS, public radio station in the States. They have over 40 hours of French each week. Some of it's good, some of it's not too good, but I mean, it's at least it's in French. And that some people can tune in, and all the news is in French and English, bilingual, and all the, you know, huh?
One after another, same story?
Same story, one after another, that's how they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and we have new words, you know, there's different phrases that people who don't understand. I do a program, I do different programs, but I mean, one of the programs I do is just my kind of music, however I'm feeling that day, and it ranges from, you know, any kind of music that I like, mostly ethnic music, and it's all in French, and I'll announce these things in French. It won't be French music, but I'll announce it in French, and if people can't understand, you know, they'll call and say, what song was that? And so I'll start saying
it. We get out of my garage sometime. What time of day do you do your program on?
Friday afternoons. At 2 o'clock. Now, you understand? I'm awake. But their French radio shows, most of the French radio shows start at about 6:30 in the morning. And on the radio stations, usually you'll find most of the French broadcast. I mean, at this radio station, it's pretty bizarre. You'll have old-time music from 6:30 to 7:30, and then from 7:30 to 11, you'll have Zydeco music. And then from 11 to 4, you'll have opera. And then from then you have All Things Considered, yeah, and then you'll have Prairie Home Companion and all this stuff. So it's a pretty unique station, you know, I mean, as far as that.
Are there people who don't speak English?
Are there people? Well, I'm sure there are. What, you mean in Louisiana? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. I know some people. Well, Dennis never speaks English to me. First time I heard him speak English was when I brought somebody else up. I think maybe when I brought Tracy over there or something like that. You know, he never does that. If French is your first language, you definitely prefer to speak French. I don't think there's anybody who can't understand a word of English. I mean, you know, because it's too predominant now. It's all over, you know. You know, I mean, there's all kind of little examples, but no, I don't think it's that rigid now. There are some people, and most people that live off the land, who live from a tradition, who haven't been totally melted down in this melted pot, would prefer to speak French and would lapse into both. Because most good jokes are always in French.
I'm curious, what do you mean French? Suppose someone who lived in France today showed up in Louisiana, would he get along fairly well? The language, or a way out?
Pas de problème. I don't think there's any problem. There are certain expressions that we have that are different. And just the grammatical, and that's what I was talking about. Basically, Louisiana, Acadian, French, and they have a dictionary now about this guy. You think, I'm fanatic. This guy is... Let me tell you this story about this guy. Now that you brought it up, he's a priest. His name is Father Daigle. He's retired. Well, he claims that the Akkadians have their own language because the Akkadian language is actually a Romanic language that is a derivative of Latin, as is Spanish, French, and not the Germanic language. Okay, so he says that our language that we spoke, the Akkadians spoke in France from 1600 on, was not a dialect, was a language of that region. When in 1635 or 37, you had in Paris, you have the 40 immortals, which was the 40 immortals, who they call, you know, the French immortals who last forever. They formed the first French dictionary, taking what was spoken in Paris at that time. But then, as you know, I mean, France, you have a different language on the west and east and south, et cetera. And so the Akkadians left. When they left France for region, but they kept up their French. You had the Jesuit priests who were there, so they knew with French. So when they moved to Louisiana, they continued that. And even though they had, in Louisiana, you had French coming in there, you would know a Frenchman by the way he spoke. And sometimes, you know, they pulled away from him, sometimes they didn't. A lot of new French word were involved with that. They said a pousse café came from the Jesuit priest who would want a little nip, you know. But also, with the Acadian language and the French language. Now, being in Louisiana, you were out of touch, and it was basically an oral language, although there are written excerpts from it. You find that when you have a lack of a term, then you use something else. You incorporate something else. So it's a true American language, in effect. That's what he's trying to say, you know. And in fact, his name is Daigle. Someone remember his first name.
He's a modern
Jules.
Man.
Jules Daigle. You have that dictionary with you? It's a remarkable dictionary. He makes up a lot of things too, but I mean, it's fun. I worked on that for a little while. It was part of this thing. I was telling Michael the other day at USL, we'd gotten a grant, a $500,000 grant called Franco-American Studies in USL for all this, and this is part of this knowledge. This is why I know this stuff. I mean, most people don't walk around knowing this stuff, even remembering it. It encompassed not only music, but language, history, women in Acadie, and geography, and all this stuff was put together so that a person could go to USL, even French, the Cajun French. There was a course in that, which you had to know basic French first and then learn this, and a person could go and graduate with this. You know, it was sort of a folkloric, but it was under the foreign language department. Well,
at the University of Southern Louisiana?
Southwestern Louisiana, yes, but what I'm saying, this... Lafayette. Oh, I'm sorry, Lafayette. Yeah, this started in, I would say 1980. And after 3 years, the university dropped it. That's it. No more. You know? It's really a shame. Well, the economy dropped. I mean, even the school was closed last summer because of this economy. Our state we are infamous with our governmental, you know, governing. So it has been tried. I mean, there have been high points, low points, and some good things happening with it. So it's not dead. I mean, getting back to the language, there was an interest, and now it's more a commercial thing. There are more Cajun restaurants, like I spoke about this cookbook and Paul Prudhomme, than ever before. So it's funny what's happening in Louisiana now. They're terming tourism as their number one source of income. And they closed all the rest areas on the interstates. All the state parks are closed. Yeah. And then, I mean, it's just ridiculous. No money. I mean, they still don't have any money. They don't have a lottery, and they don't want to do gambling because our governor is known for his gambling and all this
That's
stuff.
Probably good.
Yeah, I think that is. Well, the lottery seems to be working over here, though.
Lottery, okay, but when they go in there and gamble,
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I don't think they're going to go with it, so I don't know what's going to happen. But to answer, you know, the question again, there is a whole lot of French spoken. You won't have any problem. Another person coming in would, you know, I mean, sometimes you are self-conscious about it, about what you speak in proper, or in Parisian French nowadays, you say, j'y vais. Oh, I did that the other day and all that, how do you go in Creole and all stuff. But you can make yourself known and understood. Okay. Thank you all.
Well, it comes from a carcass. It comes from a mastodon carcass that they found there. But anyway, it has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. In this short story, Karen Crow, there's the guy Fiddler is called Beausoleil.
Was that coincidental, or did you just...
Just coincidental, unless it came in, I don't think I'd read it before. I thought I'd, I mean, I know I'd read it after. Mm-hmm. Well, then Evangeline, the fiddle player, is named Michael, so I didn't, you know, my mother had nothing to do with that.
Michael seems to be a popular name.
Well, same.
Small Michael. Good people.
That's right, all good people. I mean, I almost got named Valentin. Because I was born on Valentine's Day, so I mean, you know, at least it saved me a little bit. Oh, Jesus Christ. Any other questions before we get into it?
You could have been the Valentine Playboys or something.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Well, my favorite name of that, you know, every group is Playboys. Well, there's a town called Vatican, so they have the Vatican Playboys. Oh yeah, that's my group, man. That's my group.
What game will play back against the map?
No. Want to do this, Trisha?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Let me just do it to you.
I built this Tyler today. Any other questions before we get into it? About anything? Oh, I see what you're doing. You know what I was going to do today for a number of things? I wanted to show you, sort of bring us up to date. There's so much we can do on this thing. It's too bad it's coming to a close. I mean, we could really... But anyway, what I was going to do today is show you and even play for you how songs are transmitted, how songs have changed over the years. After I show you what happened, I mean, the end of Cajun music, the age of Cajun music, anyway. Just want to find one little thing before I do that. And one song I'm going to play for you is Allons Danser Colinda. There you go. Just what I need. No questions about anything? That's great. Y'all had a good time?
I got a question.
Not yet. Okay. What?
Do you think Napoleon would have sold Louisiana if he'd ever been there?
No, I don't. I don't think he would have done it. He should have moved there instead of going to Belgium, you know. Why did he go to Belgium? To meet his Waterloo, right? Oh.
Well, I heard that he didn't intend to part with it. He just needed the money.
He needed the money. Exactly. He thought he'd get it back. Yeah. Huh.
This way, they could have sent him down there instead of Santa Lena. You mean they were
wrong? We'd have had a good time. We'd have had a good time. He would have mellowed out over there, you know. All right. Let me just get this academia stuff done. All right, where I left y'all, I think, where we left each other. You were winning. I remember that. All right. That's right. I got the chalk. Okay. We have the first recordings, commercial recordings in 1929. Which is synonymous with the big crash, which is the root. This is Dennis McGee, Amadé Ardoin, Joe Falcon, that really turned it around with the accordion, with Alonzo Lafayette and his wife, Clément Brault, Columbus Frugier, a lot of these early pieces, Ernest Frugier, Angelas Lejeune. Now, Angelas Lejeune. I should write these names out because I probably won't even remember these things anyway.
But anyway, I'll show you sort of when we come back to this. The 1930s, 30s to 33. This is old, really old time, twin fiddle. Mostly traditional songs that they say are traditional, songs that have been learned, not new songs, although some words are added. And let me make this statement about words. The words, as far as I'm concerned, and the way the Acadian people are, most words to songs are in constant flux. They're a living entity within the song. If somebody like D.L. Menard writes a song, like La Puerta Nayar, then it's a song. If somebody like Ira Lejeune or Amadé Ardoin recorded a song, this song is not written. This song is what they feel at the time. It has a folklorist. See? Folklorist. Making all kind of noise. They have, I'll get on my thing about Ty Riott, a folklorist too. But anyway, and I think it's good to learn, if you can find somebody's text that has the music out and you can listen to it, it's good to learn the words verbatim and say, this is how this person goes. But these things are not carved in stone. For every version of a song that you find that was recorded, there was an equally fine version that somebody else never recorded who might have originated the song. It's just to remember that. It's the song. And that's to me what's really most important with the music, is that it's at the time that you do it. It's at the time and the feeling that you do it. And I mean, everything varies, but you stay along those lines pretty good. And you can tell what's going on here. In the 30s, then we have string bands. And I had a great tape of this, but the tape broke yesterday. It was one of those cassettes that don't have screws, so I'm going to have to take the whole thing out. And I also had Ira Lejeune without bass. But anyway, string bands. And some bands you can look up are the Hackberry Ramblers. Now, this is, I'm not going to go on and on about this. The Hackberry Ramblers was Lutheran Darbon. And they played fiddle and guitar, some mandolins, even a saxophone. Lutheran lived over, this is Louisiana right here? Oh, that would be great. But you're going to have to put it in a new shell.
Yeah. He got new shell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard that. This is a great tape. Thank you. You mean you're going to miss the tape? Anyway, he's from this part of Louisiana. Right. This coast right here. The left coast of Louisiana, and this is Texas right here.
Where the left starts.
Where the left starts. This class, I'm going to have to put this on here. Plus one. Oh, plus two. I'm going to give you two. God, you know it's early. All right. The heel. So this is this Western music also coming through. This is very much country influenced because of Nashville and what's coming off the Grand Ole Opry. But also, in conjunction with what's going on here, what I said a little bit earlier about the black influence, this is white, this is the string bands, it's almost mainly white. Amadé Ardoin records alone in the 30s. You know, it's the lines are gone. Not really drawn, but they're starting to happen. Not too much black recordings at all as far as French music in South Louisiana. Jazz is really coming up. And that's another thing I want to point out. 1917 closed Storyville. Some people went up St. Louis, New York. Some people went to the bayous. Some of those people like Bunk Johnson, who came back, who played with Buddy Bolden. There was also Hippolyte Charles, who played with Buddy Bolden. There was a fiddler by the name of Bradford Gordon, who played what they called jazz, but it wasn't called jazz at that time. It was just a certain kind of music in Opelousas. So they had this influence. Well, what I'm saying about Lutter and the Hackberry Ramblers, they were influenced by these kind of people. There were black bands, and people had to dress up and ties and everything that was going on in that time. And this was Now, accordions were still prevalent, but even Joe Falco tried to learn how to play the accordion. I mean, the fiddle. Nathan Abshire did. This was string band. This was Americanization period, this 30s. And I'm going to race it and come back from that. Any questions? I mean, that was pretty fast, but any questions on that? Where were you, boy? 1926. A guy by the name of Bauschmann in Austria. 1826. 1826, Austria. Diatonic accordion. It was. Let me see. I don't want to look at that. Anyway. Oh, about 1962. We don't know. We don't know. We say around the turn of the century. Around the turn of the century. So that it had been played for 30 years, more or less. But I mean, how does an instrument like that really infiltrate a society? We don't know. But we know it's like Tracy was saying the other day, that's from my research, it seems like blacks picked it up first, or were playing it at the same time, or it was an accessible instrument. Who knows? The Acadians were playing it at the same time, because I talked to these Germans in this town of Crowley where they had German accordions, and it was Acadians who were playing it. But it was first recorded in 1929, kind of went out in the 30s, kind of went out in the 40s a little bit. And the end of the 40s and the 1950s, we find of the Renaissance again, with people like Ira Lejeune. Now, Lejeune. Ira played the music. Ira was almost blind. He had some kind of like glaucoma or something like that on his eyes, or some kind of disease. I mean, he could see a little bit. He played music of Amadis Ardoin. Verbatim. I mean, a lot of his songs just came from Angelas Lejeune, Angelas, as they say, Lejeune. It was, I think, his uncle. Played some blues, that blues that Tracy plays. I Got the World in a Jug and all that. Played this kind of stuff, but incredible musician, really the height of virtuosity. At that time, people claimed that Amadis Ardoin played a little bit too, it was that old style like Dennis, jumping like this. And Ira kind of smoothed it out. Same time, Nathan Abshire, who had recorded in the 30s, began playing again, that kind of band. Lawrence Walker, a lot of songs come from him. Lawrence Walker recorded in the late 20s, playing fiddle under the with his brothers, the Walker brothers. He was playing accordion now. This is mainly accordion, fiddle, guitar, accordion, fiddle, guitar, accordion, fiddle, guitar. Then it became have the steel guitar, which was coming directly from the string band era into this thing. And the mid-50s, say 1955 and before, but you have this, the Aldous Roget. This is the TV band. This is the first station in southwest Louisiana, which was in Lafayette. And Aldous Roget and the Lafayette Playboys were played on there. Now, as I said, it was accordion. The accordion, twin fiddles. That was Doc Guidry, Tony Thibodeau, sometimes Sleepy Hoffpower, Louis Foreman, different people. Steel guitar, really good player. Pellissier played. I'll see if we can remember somebody else. Drums, bass, all electric. This was the band. This was the big band. This just knocked everybody out. People, it came back. This is also the time of Hadakal. You know about Hadakal that we talk about? Hadakal, there was a man called Cousin Dud. His name, Dudley LeBlanc, Cousin Dud. And he had this remedy, it's called Hadakal. which was 80% alcohol, and he had these big shows. It was like the old traveling caravan. He'd have stars. I mean, that's where I saw Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. And, yeah. And they had, in fact, that's where D.L. Menard first saw Hank Williams, because of this show. And you know what that did? Huh?
What's it called?
Had a call. Had a call. Like, had a lot of alcohol. So it was a big scam, and so anyway, it finally folded. He sold it. He was a smart guy. He was also a senator, and he sold it right before this whole thing crashed. You know, they found out about it. But anyway, this was going. I don't know why we got into Kuzan Dud.
He's got an
ambassador. Yeah, but we had some.
He introduced Trump.
Was that a sponsor, maybe?
It was. I don't know why we got into Kuzan Dud. Anyway, Kuzan Dud was there. Dud LeBlanc. No problem. Had a call. What's that? What?
Dr. Titchener, did he get down to Louisiana?
Oh, yeah, he's still there. But that's only 20% or 14% or something like that. All right, so this is what we have here. This is like the band. Cajun music at that time. And even now, 90%, 95% of everything we know comes from this era. Now, this is all within Louisiana. Some of these people traveled abroad and outside. They have some people who went to Nashville, because that was the place. That was the place, you know, if you wanted to get out. Some people, Al Terry, you know, kind of like one of those Guy Lombardo Cajun singers. And then to go outside, this was Louisiana. And what happened outside, you have Jimmy Sinu. And what does the C stand for? Cajun. That's me, y'all. I'm sorry. Y'all what? And then you have Doug and his brother, Rusty. We used to call them Dusty and Plug. These people went, I mean, real good musicians. It's out, you know, in the outside. And this was going on maybe in the early 60s. I think Jimmy even recorded, and there's a re-release of his album, Folk Songs of the Acadians on Decca. It's really amazing. Rufus Thibodeau, Shardy LeBlanc. Did you ever hear this one? And this guy is talking in between them, said, well, this is what people do down bayous. You know, it's a really interesting album. Okay, that was sort of commercial. I'll get back to those. Then you have, okay, we're doing the 60s. It must have been 60. You probably know this better than I do, Tracy. When the first Cajun group went up there with Dewey and Gladys Thibodeau and all those, was it 64 in Newport?
That's a real turning point, isn't
it? Yeah, that's it. That's when Dewey went up there playing guitar. And he was used to playing fiddle, but he played guitar, and he said his fingers were bleeding. He wasn't used to playing. I guess you know the story better than I do. But anyway, this would happen. And what happened when Dewey, he came back. He's a man with a purpose. Of course, he had his brothers with him and was planning to play. And he said next time he wanted to go with his brothers. Also, Dewey and his brothers were playing with Nathan. And so they went up there, I think it was 66. Was the next time? 67. Okay, so in 1966, Canary Fontenot and Bois Sec, who we saw in the movie, go up there. And before even, this is Newport, before the national folk festivals, even in the 50s, Lawrence Walker, it was in Oklahoma, Lawrence Walker went there. So people were getting out and coming back. Aldous Rogier went to National Folk Festival. Let's see if I can remember who else. Anyway, this is what was going on here. This is sort of folk focus as far as this. I'm not into Zydeco yet because this is still termed as Louisiana Cajun music. And no big events happened. 1968, Cotefil. This is what happened in Louisiana. And then we have the 70s. 1974, you have the first a festival, Festivals Acadiennes, or Hommage à la Musique Acadienne, which was honoring Cajun musicians, not stars, although Jimmy Sununu was there at the first one, but it was the folk music, not really folk music, but music that was playing. They had Varese Connor was there, Clifton Chenier was there, Mark Savoy was there, Dewey was there, their whole, all the brothers. That sort of went on in the 70s. And with Dewey going back and forth, Dewey's the most traveled, I believe, going back and forth. All of a sudden, accordion builders. Mark starts making accordions here. All of a sudden, the accordion business, because before that, we're asking about accordions. Right, they were made in Germany up till World War II. The best brands were called Monarchs and Sterlings. They had Lesters, which was kind of were kind of bulkier. So being crack bombardiers in the UAAF, they bombed out all the factories, and also they switched over from making accordions to bombs, and they never came back. So what we had were Honor accordions, which weren't exactly up to par with these old sort of accordions. So it was, I'll think of his name, it's coming. It's a man that Mark learned from in Lake Charles. It might have been Sidney Brown. Yeah, let's put Sidney Brown. At this time, Sidney Brown. Thank you, Trace. Tracy gets two. He had two on the thing. Tracy Brown, he was the only man who really, really repaired. Tracy Brown. Tracy Brown. Tracy Brown. That's it. That's it. No one would ever know. There are no Schwartz in Louisiana. Tracy Brown. I like, okay, anyway. So so Mark Savoy starts building accordions. This 9 o'clock class is so ridiculous. I'm gonna shut up right now. Mark Savoy starts making accordions. And so you have accordions available. There's over 30 accordion makers now in Louisiana. Fiddles, you know, what happened to the fiddle styles? You have, like, I mentioned Rufus Thibodeau. What I did miss out on, or did not mention, was the continuation of string bands from the 30. And one of the men that is very well known and has done a lot is Harry Choates. Choates. He had a Southwestern hit called Jolie Blonde, which was Joe Falcon's first song, half sung in French and half sung in English, but just played on fiddle and, you know, steel guitar and that kind of stuff. Very influential guy. He died in 52, I believe. And Rufus Thibodeau, it's not how you spell his name, it's how you pronounce it. Thibodeau. It's E-A-U-X. Sort of follows in that. Rufus went to Nashville. There's another outstanding fiddle player by the name of Merlin Fontenot. You know, these are real good fiddle players. Exceptional fiddle players, mostly country and western, where they can play country and western and Cajun too. We talked about that a little bit the other day. And that sort of takes us to us to where we are now. From the 70s and 80s. Okay, well that was in 1969. Is that when we graduated from high school and we just started playing. And it wasn't a band. It was just a group of friends from Scott who we spoke French together and played acoustic music. That's what was going on in the world. I didn't know what a folk festival was. My sister, who was 4 years older than us, had terrible taste. She had these New Lost City Rambler albums and this radical Bob Dylan and all this stuff. And so he said, well, this is what's going on. So we kind of heard this stuff, and we knew people played acoustic music. And so that's what happened. But our group really didn't get formed until 1976, when we went to France. And we recorded there in 76. We didn't know what. Anyway, we had a group before that in 75 called Koto. And this is a name that sometimes, for young people, this is a unique band we had. It was Bessel Dujon, who now plays with Jimmy C. Newman, who is Hector Dujon's son. Hector Dujon plays with Oak Todd Clark. Bessel played accordion and fiddle, and we played twin fiddles and we played fiddle accordion, but we had twin guitars, so we played like Charlie Christensen things and danced and wrote a lot of music. And so all of a sudden we had old people come to hear us and never heard Cajun music like that, you know. And then you had young people who would dance to this stuff and say, well, there's something going on, you know. We'd play songs like the Mardi Gras, which would last for about 20 minutes, and you know, they didn't know what was going on. So we had a good time with this group and played places like Boo Boos, you know, and that was it. That brings us up to date.
How'd you come up with your present name?
What, which name?
Beau Soleil.
Beau Soleil? Okay. Well, it's a name. It's a T name. It's like a name that it's a nickname that has followed the Cajun people. People within the Cajun culture have been nicknamed Beau Soleil, and it sometimes it's stuck, and it's been a family name, whatever. Beau Soleil. It literally means beautiful sun, but it's more of a sort of an ideal about things. Just to repeat myself, there was Beau Soleil in Acadie in 1755 when the English were deporting them. He like mutinied the ship and he brought the people to safety, and he also threw the English overboard and continued ferrying Acadians there. He stayed up there. He stayed up in Nova Scotia. There was a Beau Soleil Broussard who sort of reestablished the Acadian community in Broussard, Louisiana. And how I got that name for my family, there's a side of my family, Ducey's originally, they were in this part of St. Martinsville, and then they moved to Lorville in Catahoula. And my dad and his brother, one of his brothers, moved to Scott. And their house, their old house, which is still standing over there, it's pretty old, early 1800s. My great aunt named that Beau Soleil. So it was just a name. It was just a name. And like I said, after figuring out this name, it wasn't really, must have been subconsciously there. And after that, I found out all these things that happened to.
No special messages if you say it backwards.
Ouija. Yes. No, I don't know. We're not going to get too. You want to talk in tongues? Yeah.
The 40s. Yeah. Now you had string bands.
Okay, 40s. Okay.
Was that just a continuation of the same thing in the 30s? And did the war have any effect?
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah. I kind of really skipped over that. I'm sure in the 40s. I have the late. Actually, it's the late 40s. It's just 40 to 40. 49. In that time, is all over America, or all over rural America, people are being drafted. So they're coming together. They're seeing other cultures sort of for the first time, especially Acadians. My dad was I think he was in the Air Force before that, but then, you know, he went in, and I've seen his old books, you know, and they was nicknamed Frenchie. I'm sure that went on and on and on, you know. What happened is that they had a lot of color. I mean, they witnessed a lot of them, shared a lot, and brought it back. But also in Louisiana, to bring it right down back again, right here, it's Port Arthur. That's that golden triangle where it's Texas and Louisiana meet their shipyards. Well, Harry Schoetz played for people in that shipyards to keep it, because people were working on 12-hour shifts, you know. So they'd have musicians come out, and they had French musicians. Harry Schoetz played there. Dewey Balfour, who was in the Merchant Marines, remembers hearing him there. A lot of people went there to work and would hear that. So the music was continuing to maintain momentum. Not necessarily with accordion. Accordion is sort of after World War II. So accordion, the resurgence, you know, just after World War II. But the music and the French is still there. That's sort of what happened. I wasn't there, but that's sort of what happened. So it was, you know, it's not well documented. They still had dances. Like I said, the Mardi Gras wasn't reestablished until 1951 in Mamou, you know, which is, you know, now very well known for that kind of stuff. And you have great people coming out of that time, Reuven Reed from Mamou, who did a whole lot. He, like I said, he used to be a Christian brother, could read and write French, wrote a book in French, promoted this radio show. Dennis and Sadie continue to play again, invited to folk festivals. 1970, I believe the first festival was 72, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. Always included Cajun music, always included Cajun music. So you have so all of a sudden this, you know, regeneration again. And also, we still have, good morning, we still have the people who originally made the music, which is really good. There's no time for, I don't know. You see, for revivalists, I don't know. I really don't understand that word, in a way. I mean, I understand people who redo the music because it's dying, and it come from a different area, called revivalist. But at the same time, how does Lomax call this? Cultural guided missiles. Uh-huh. Which cultural guided missiles? Mike Seeger, who's here, not right here, but who's here, and Rinsler came down there. Ralph Rinsler, Seeger and Rinsler came down there in the early '60s to gather information to do the folk festival. I guess that was the basis for all that stuff. Bob Jones went down there. You know, people come in, Tracy Swartz coming in there and making an album with Dewey Balfour in the 70s, you know, about Cajun music again. All these are outside influences. I don't think it's revivalist because it's a different kind of approach. It's people within the culture because you can't, like you said, I'm sure it's like any culture, mountain culture, whatever, music. I mean, this is music just of the people. It's very simple music, but it's the whole culture, it's the whole people. Whatever we have in us is expressed out there. As long as we have that in Louisiana, or wherever we were, that music is going to continue.
Michael, you have in your songs you played for us, and in your songs the band plays and other people play. You have some songs with tunes that go back probably to the end of the last century or before.
Mm, okay.
And those things have somehow fiddle tunes have somehow survived.
Yeah.
Two major accordion outbreaks.
Yeah, right.
And that string band era.
I like it, G. Like it.